Mitzvah Reish Samech 260. Shelo lekalel av va'im. Not to curse one's father or mother. Shelo lekalel av va'im. Not to curse your parents. Shenemar ish asher kalel savi v'simo. If you curse your either of one of your parents, so you get the following consequences. Va'im es sha'ikar. Shikar azhora bekilas av va'im. Eina min amikra hazeh. The main place of the Torah where it discusses the prohibition of cursing one's parents is not from here. Kibikan lo yazki rak onish. What?
Not from what?
It's not from here, this verse right here. Because here it only discusses the punishment b'makalel. It discusses the what happens to you if you curse your parents, not that it is prohibited to curse your parents. We know we have a principle that the Torah does not say that there's a punishment unless it's said in a different place that it's forbidden. Oh. It can't just say if you do this you're going to get offed. It has to say it's forbidden, and then in another place has to say the punishment. The same, very similar verse appears in Parashas Mishpatim. U'makalel aviv imo mos yumas. If you curse your father or your mother, you shall surely be put to death. Shegam kein lo diber el avonish. That pasuk as well only discusses the punishment and not the prohibition itself. V'zeu shamru b'mechilta, the halachic medrash on Sefer Shmos, over there in Parshas Mishpatim, comes to the rescue. Where does it say that it's forbidden to curse your parents without mentioning the punishment? I mean, it can mention the punishment also, but it has to say in the lashon that it's forbidden as opposed to just that you'll suffer the consequences.
Mos yamos means he will surely die or he will
be put to death. You must. You're not yamus, you must. Uh-huh. A different conjugation. Yamus is the kal, and yumas is the hufal. Hufal means something shall be done to you, caused to you.
By people or by God.
The Lachik Medrash says, we learned a punishment over here, so where does it say the prohibition? Tamalomar Elohim lo sikalel. You shall not curse important people, judges. Im dayin hu aviv hario b'chal Elohim lo sikalel. So if your father happens to be a judge, your father could be an official judge, and you could have this prohibition to curse him from that verse. V'im nasihu, hario b'chlal v'nasi b'yam chalo sa'or. The different pasuk says that you shall not curse a leader, the leader, the king could be the king, a person in a position of major leadership in your community, in your nation. V'im burhu, if you're just a regular, even an ignoramus, certainly somebody who knows what he's doing. So even if he's an ignoramus, harehu bichlal lo sekalel cheresh. We saw that there was a pasuk earlier in Parshas Kedoshim that says you're not to curse any Jewish person at all. So hareata don binyanav mishlosh don. So even though there's no one verse that says explicitly thou shalt not curse thy parents, it says since they could be included in one of these three categories. So we have what's called a binyanav, that since something is mentioned indirectly, it could be potentially included in a number of different categories. So it's as if the Torah said explicitly, you shall not curse your parents, when these three prohibitions are coupled with the fact that it says elsewhere, if you curse your parents, you'll be put to death. So since your parents fall under one of these three things, three categories, so that's considered a azhara, is considered to, the Torah stated the prohibition, and then it's the Torah can state the punishment. Yeah, but I think the idea is that that's weaker. Since there are three instances of the prohibition, so it's certainly, in other words, it's emphasizing to us that your parents certainly fall under one of them, no matter what their status in life.
Judges or.
So here, since you have three different verses into which your parents could potentially fall, so since you have the binyanav, that you have a concept that emerges from the three, so that's stronger than if it just came from the one pasuk.
Sorry, I must have blanked out for a minute. What are the three?
Elohim lo sikalel, you shall not curse judges. The nasi b'amcha lo sa'or, you shall not curse a leader in your people. And lo sikalel charish, you shall not curse the deaf. That doesn't mean literally deaf, it means any Jew.
In other words, the prohibition includes not to curse, let's say, Ben-Gurion. Well, there's cursing and criticism.
We'll see. Hare, I mean, probably.
Why is that so hard? I mean, is that a good thing to do? Oh, because he's it's a not Shabbos, you mean?
No, because it says benasi be'amcha lo sa'or, as we'll see that how it's applied to parents here. Since it says by one of the curses, nasi be'amcha lo sa'or, a leader within your nation, you shall not curse. So it's interpreted to mean that all the prohibitions of cursing only apply to someone who's be'amcha, who's among your nation, who does Jewish things.
But it says so leader
of
your nation.
The fact that he wasn't Shomer Shabbos is what the...
Right, so then this prohibition would not apply. I wouldn't, I mean, don't want to specifically mention Ben Gurion.
Anything about Shomer Shabbos or anything else?
No, but he didn't go in the Jewish way. He didn't go in the Jewish way. So somebody who doesn't go in the Jewish way is excluded from these prohibitions. It's certainly not a good idea, unless you make the argument that you want to give a chinuch lesson.
Right.
If you say to your kids, if you curse a certain person in Jewish history, so you want your kids to know that it was a horrible person. Right. As somebody once said, I once was at a certain place where somebody mentioned Ben Gurion, followed by Shem Rishayim Yerkov. May the name of the wicked rot. So, in my little party that was sitting in this place where this person was speaking, I don't want to give too many details, we were just sort of looking at each other like, how do you say that? So why would you, why? You don't have to, just because it might be mutter to curse him in some ways doesn't mean that it's a good midos to go around cursing unnecessarily, adding such things. And somebody also saw later that there was some gadol, or somebody said, Ben-Gurion Shem Rishayim Yerkov, and the Gadol was very makbid on this person for having said such a thing. He said, what do you mean? If he died childless, so his wife would be subject to Yibum, right? So his wife would be subject to Yibum in order that his name not be erased from Israel. So just because he's not from, it doesn't mean you should say that his name should rot. He should be subject to the mitzvah of Yibum. We want his wife to marry his brother so that his name could be continued in Israel. You can't say just because someone's not from Shem Rishayim Yerkov doesn't mean you can't use any curse. That's true.
But that particular
curse that this Godel felt was inappropriate for that particular person. So again, it's like if you look in Rabbi Daniel Feldman's book on the laws of Lashon Hara. So he has a whole section about how even if certain things might be technically mutter, and they might not be good for your midos, so you don't have to indulge all the time. You just have to have, you could take a step back and maybe be a little bit more lenient about it, because...
Well, there's another issue, maybe...
Right, I'm not endorsing, get me wrong, I'm not endorsing cursing
about it. I'm just saying that with someone like Staggered.
It also depends on your approach to Zionism. If you're a Rav Kook type of thinker, then you think, well... Sometimes God works in mysterious ways, and even though the main Zionists were not from, nevertheless, they had such kedusha from love of their Eretz Yisrael, and they're building Eretz Yisrael. They were, that could be mechaper on their Chilul Shabbos and other things. That's the Rav Kook approach. The other approach is that it casts a pall on the... Well, first of all, you have, obviously, Neturei Karito don't believe in the whole enterprise, but even if you have religious... We'll call, say, for the time being, Haredi people who none that aren't opposed per se necessarily to a Jewish state, but they had the whole fact that the founders of the state were not religious, were not observant, casts a pall over the whole enterprise.
There weren't enough religious people in Israel at the time, maybe, to choose from.
I don't know. Whatever it is, the facts in their opinion cast a pall on it. So if you're a Rav Kook thinker, so obviously not going to curse Ben-Gurion because his good parts maybe outweighed the bad, which other people might not agree with. Okay. They're among your people, and you're not allowed to curse them because of losakala cheresh. So the same thing, there's a separate prohibition that you're not allowed to curse your father, he says, but it applies to both parents. So, in other words, that's enough. Those three, there's no separate prohibition, but those three are enough to consider it as if there's a separate prohibition when it's coupled with the punishment of death. V'chein amru gamkin b'sifra, the Lachek Medrash here says, ish asher yikalel, each person who curses their parent, onesh shamanu kamo haloshon asher b'mechilta b'shavet. The same thing that the Mechilta says. There's no specific verse that says you're not allowed to curse your parents. So when I'm organizing my Sefer HaChinuch and going by each mitzvah, so I'm going to put it here where it talks about the prohibition.
So
Shehu medaber be'onesh. So the Rambam did that as well, so I'm following in good footsteps. Mishor she mitzvah kasavdi be'mishpatim, it's as low as sase gimel. So I wrote it when it talks about hitting your parents, striking your parents. So I wrote the reasons over there that, again, it's part of the whole kibud avim, that you have part of society is you have to be grateful and you have to act properly to those who brought you in the world and raised you. Otherwise, we'd have total anarchy in each generation and the other. So that's why the Torah is very, very machmir about the relationships between parents and children. They have to be with the utmost honor. And certainly cursing is the opposite of that, so deserving of the highest form of punishment. Midine ha-mitzvah alachos are as follows. Kigon ma sha'amru shechiyuv kilas ha'av ha'im hu bein b'chayehem o afilu achar mosam. That this prohibition does not end when your parents die. Even when your parents are already dead, or either one of your parents is dead, then if you curse that your dead parent, and then you are fully subject to the penalty. Ma she'ein kein b'hakosh ein achiyuv b'ki'im b'chayehem. So we talked about that you're also put to death for striking your parents and creating some sort of blood loss, either in the form of a bruise or other ways. So that's all your only chayav if your parents are alive. But if you whack...
You can't easily strike them when they're buried.
Well, they could be dead before they're buried. If you whack your parents' corpse, and, you know, as much as you want, so that's not not a good idea. There's a prohibition in Nivul Hames that in Judaism we have prohibitions, again, that you have to deal respectfully with a dead body in general. But I'm saying for the technical prohibition of striking one's parents, it would not be liable once the parent is dead.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But you are chayav for cursing your parent, even if your parent is dead. That cursing that results in the full punishment of death is only if you use one of the names of God. So if you say Hashem in the real way, or Elohim, Ka, whatever, one of these, if you use one of these names of God, and you use the curse your parents, may God, you know, smite so-and-so, or cause such and such terrible things to happen to your parent, then that is the Iker prohibition that results in the full penalty. Makalon bekinui pater miskila. So if you say, may the merciful one smite so-and-so, who's your parent, then that would not, you're exempt from stoning, but you see the penalty of lashes, just like you receive the penalty of lashes for cursing a regular person. So again, for this specific prohibition, the extra penalty by a parent, which is the severe death penalty of stoning, is only if you use one of the names of God, the main names of God to curse.
Now,
to curse
ironic,
them.
May the merciful one strike you.
Right. Right, okay. Maybe the merciful one is vis-a-vis me. Maybe you don't like your parents. Maybe you'd rather see them gone. So if the guy's really merciful, you should get rid of them. Anyway, so what's your example?
Well, I know someone rather well who was subject to a great deal of abuse and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Baruch Hashem, she's come out of it and she's still from it. She's in pretty good shape. But there are scars. But when her father died, she asked the Shaila, and not of an open Orthodox, and not of a modern Orthodox, of a real straight, narrow person. And
just thinking your dichotomy over there, but yeah. Right.
What?
That was an interesting contrast over there.
No, but I mean, it wasn't just someone who was abusive. The person said he told her not to sit Shiva. That's how bad it was. So, and occasionally she speaks about it. She doesn't curse them, but she says, yeah, whatever the bad thing was that they did, or indicates that the relationship was not great.
Well,
it's not.
If it's just vis-a-vis the relationship, then you might still be chayav, but if they did something, which it sounds like it could very well be in this case, that the parents did something that puts them outside of the purview of ba'amcha,
uh-huh,
that they don't act like a Jewish person, uh-huh, doesn't mean that they occasionally say Lashon Hara. That's not what it means. If they really do something that puts them outside of a normative Jewish behavior, then that would exempt you from all these things, yeah.
Well, that reminds me of a case where the father walked out on the family when the person was very small, and she was told she didn't have to sit Shiva for him.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
By a sort of YU type.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was even a possibility, and apparently he was very like, no, you don't have to sit shiva. Because she, you know, walked out, left the family, and you know, whatever, all that.
Right, it depends how bad it is in each particular case. I mean, there's also more reason that you'd exempt someone from the mourning of the 12 months as opposed to shiva and shloshim, because as the famous Chakira goes, that mourning ends after shloshim. There's no more mourning after shloshim. So why do you have to have some mourning practices for your parents for the entire year after your parents died? The answer is that that's al kibud aveim. The extra 11 months is because of kibud aveim. It's not because of mourning per se. So if you have a type of relationship with your parents where you might not be required to honor them because they did very bad things to you, so then there's what to be said for perhaps, again, only with asking a shayla, to be exempt from the extra 11 months of mourning. But shiva and shloshim, it's a little more difficult, because that's more of an automatic thing when you have a blood relationship. So again, if it's really, really bad, so maybe yes. I'm not saying every situation is different, but yeah. So again, but if your parents are not osim aisa amcha, then they are exempt from this this cursing business that you would not you not be chayav the penalty. So this does not extend to grandparents. You don't receive skila for cursing your grandparents, although, again, it's proper to honor them in some ways, although the mitzvah, at least the raisa, certainly only applies to one's actual parents, maybe the rabbanan, to your father's father, maybe, but to all agree, there's no, but again, obviously, it's not, it's proper, that you have to honor your grandparents at least a little bit. So, but at least for this technical thing of cursing, so grant does not apply to grandparents. So you could have a court case between a father and a son where the father is required to swear an oath in order to, you know, and to do his part in the court case with his son. And in that case, the son does not give the father an oath that contains a curse in it. In other words, many times in a regular court case, if you have to take an oath that you're telling the truth, so they say, if I'm not telling the truth, may all these bad things happen to me. And when it comes to a father and a son, so you just the father just has to say he swears he's telling the truth, and that's it. V'amar gam kein she'asur levazoso klal, that it's forbidden to degrade one's parents at all, which we would discuss a little bit when we're talking about kibud aveim and yiras aveim. That, you know, when if you're in the middle of giving a shiur and one of your parents walks in and starts ripping off your jacket and ripping off your tie and ripping off your yarmulke, whatever it is, so then you're just supposed to calmly say, "May I please have my clothing back?" You're not supposed to do anything to degrade them. So we have very stringent rules about you're not supposed to do anything that could degrade or disgrace your parents. Shelo al haklala ikpida Torah el afal bizayon. So not just you're not allowed to curse them, you're not even allowed to do anything that denigrates them. And the vazehu arehu be'arur, even though there's no penalty as such for degrading them, you're nevertheless subject to a curse. Shenemar arur makle aviv imo. So the Torah in Parshas Kisavo, when it talks about all the curses, it says that somebody who there uses makle, which is a similar word for curse, but over there it doesn't really mean, we assume that it's an extended definition of cursing, even to something that's degrading. So again, no human punishment, but you're cursed in the eyes of God. And even though there's no set punishment, if the Bezdin sees that people are going around doing things that degrade their parents, then they're allowed to impose penalties that they make up, that they feel are appropriate at the time. The seventh parak of Masechet Sanhedrin. So it applies to males and females. If that's the case, so tumtum and androgynos would be subject too, because androgynos is a hermaphrodite. A tumtum is somebody who has ambiguous genitalia, and androgynos is somebody who is a hermaphrodite, who has both sets of genitalia, so it doesn't really matter. In other words, since it applies to all people, so it doesn't matter if you're male or female or androgynous or whatever, so you're always liable for the prohibition to curse one's parents. Ushtuki chayav al imo ve'eno chayav al aviv. This is very interesting. A shtuki is the child of an unmarried woman. The child of an unmarried woman is called a shtuki. And
what does shtuki mean?
Silent.
Oh.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Or in other words, he doesn't know who his father is. I can't say who my father is.
It's so shameful.
No. It just means... No.
You don't know who his...
Right, it just means...
Sometimes you do. I mean,
we don't know. It's more like, don't know who his father is. That's what I mean.
But right, what about Frieda? Suppose you do know.
Oh.
So high school.
The Stuki is a very interesting case where if you ask the mother, so who is the father of your child... And she says, well, it's so-and-so, and he's, or even if she doesn't say the name, I think, that he just says, it's a regular Jewish person, this child is, I mean, he'd be Jewish anyway, a Jewish mother, but I'm saying this child is a fully Meyuchistic Jew.
Supposing the guy's a Kohen.
Right. So, it's a good question. So, she wouldn't be, so the idea is that she's not, she's Naaman to the extent that she can't, that if she says that the child, right, the idea is not a mamzer, right, not a mamzer, right, exactly. So if the, you might have to be concerned that if, you know, this random woman just comes and shows up pregnant, you know, maybe the father was a mamzer. You don't know who exactly who the father is, but if she says, no, the father was a regular Jew, no stigma, then you believe her and the child is a, you don't assign any stigma at all to the child, but you still don't believe her 100% as to who the father is. Mm-hmm. So, in other words...
So that's this category.
That's this category over here. So even if she says the father is so-and-so and he's a kosher person, so you believe her insofar as a child is concerned, but you don't believe her insofar as the relationship, exact relationship between the child and the supposed father.
So what's the child's name?
Ah, good question.
It would be Ben, the mother's name. I think, yeah.
Oh, wow. Not Ben Abraham.
No, Ben Avram is only for converts.
Wow.
No, because if you, the child is not a convert. If you give the child Ben Avram Avinu, then it seems as if the child is a convert, which
because
is not true.
Then you spend your whole life saying to people, say no, I mean your father, and then you'd have to say no, but I'm this weird category called, you know, when the kid gets an Aliyah.
Right.
The kid gets an Aliyah, he's Ben his mother's name?
No, if you get an Aliyah, look, there's a difference between when you get an Aliyah and when you have to write the correct name for legal purposes. So if you want to get an Aliyah, so you can go by, if you're embarrassed at your situation, so you don't have to use your actual father's name. This used to happen all the time, that when a person's father went to Shmad, became baptized, then... they would, the person would be so embarrassed as to have a relationship with this, with their real father, they used to get aliyahs with the grandfather's name.
I was going to say grandfather's name.
But if you have to write the name in an official legal capacity, such as in a ksuba or even worse, in a get, so then that doesn't cut it. And you have to use, you would not be allowed to use a fake father's name.
But would you, if you... If she says she doesn't, well, okay.
So if you write the name of get, actually, I believe you would omit both names. You just write the person's name himself, because if you write the mother's name, it appears as if the father's not Jewish.
Oh,
so if you know for sure that the father's not Jewish, then you only have the recourse of writing the mother's name. If the father's certainly not Jewish, then in the get you write the mother's name. But again, if you did that for a shtuki, that would appear that the father's not Jewish. It might not necessarily be true, so you would just write the person's first name without a patronym at all.
You know, I once knew some people. They used to live in the neighborhood. His name was Abraham. The guy's name was Abraham. The girl's name was Sarah. So their kids are... It's not his name. Obviously, his middle name wasn't Avinu. His middle name was whatever it was. I don't remember.
Okay, but if somebody's parents are Abraham and Sarah, so in an official capacity, like in a ksuba or in a get, then you would write, if the person is really a convert, you have to write Ben Avram Avinu.
Okay, so then there is a difference.
Or Bas Avram Avinu.
Just amusing.
Right, but when you're reading the ksuba under the chuppah and you don't want to publicize that the person is a convert, then you can omit the Avinu. You could just say Ben Avram, Bas Avram.
Okay.
I'm saying in the document itself, it has to say that the person is a convert. Right, so you have the same thing, by the way, when you're in an official document, when sometimes you don't know whether the person is a convert or not. So let's say there's some shaila about the mother's conversion, and then the person that had a conversion, him or herself, l'chumra, then you don't know whether the person's a convert and you should write Ben Avram Avinu, or whether the person's really Jewish and you should write Ben, father's or the mother's name. So in such a situation, you'd also leave out the Ben or Bas at all. You just write the first name.
Okay.
Anyway, fine. So a shtuki is chayev on the mother and not on the father. Why? Because even though you believe the mother to the extent that the person is considered, that the child is considered a full kosher Jew, you do not believe her regarding the exact details of the relationship between the father and the child. So therefore, if the person curses the father, the person would not receive the penalty of skila because of this reason. If the game of Elmer ben Ploni, even if the mother says that he's the son of so and so. But if the person is a mamzer, then he is absolutely chayav for both his parents. Because just because he's a mamzer, he still has the full halachic relationship with each of the parents. Shereihu roi lirash osa midin Torah. See, he would yarshin them if he's fully the father of the and the mother of this mamzer. So therefore, he gets the yerusha, he gets the inheritance. V'din ben kosher yeshlo gam kein le'inyan avelus l'chol davar. If you're a mamzer and your father dies, mother dies, you have to sit shiva. Your parents are not number one A-plus behaving Jews. You still have to sit shiva, especially if they did shiva. And there's nothing to talk about. Aval haben min ha-shifcha min ha-nochris eino chayev al kilosan. But if a Jewish man has a child with a maidservant or a not straight-out non-Jewish woman, then the child is not liable for cursing the father because...
Maidservant Jewish?
So maidservant Shifcha Knanis means that it's sort of a quasi-convert. A Jewish slave, I mean, Evik called a non-Jewish slave, Evik Knani or Shifcha Knanis is an in-between category between a convert and a non-Jew. They're a slave in a Jewish official slave in a Jewish household gets a quasi-conversion, is chayiv in mitzvos like a woman, even the male slaves. And, yeah, they're quasi-Jewish, but they're not totally Jewish. In other words...
They count for a minion.
No, they don't count for a minion.
Okay.
So if a man has a child with a shifcha knanis, a non-Jewish maidservant, even though she had a quasi-conversion, since she's not fully Jewish... So his child is not considered his child. It's the same as if a man has a child with a non-Jewish woman. The Jewish man has a child with a non-Jewish woman, so halachically he has a zero relationship with his child because a Jew and a non-Jew in halacha cannot be related under any circumstances at all bichlal. So if this child then wants to convert and become Jewish and curses the father, then the child would not be liable for, because halachically speaking, this person is not the father at all, just because biologically it's the father.
So working that backwards, that means that in that case, for example, where the father, where I just happened to see people like this in the street yesterday, so I hadn't thought of this.
Yeah.
So that means that the grandmother, the father, you know, all of these people, they wouldn't sit shiva, they wouldn't anything if something happened to the child. If they have no...
You mean
then
something happened to the child?
Something happened to the child.
Correct. Ooh. I mean, you're allowed to volunteer shiva.
Uh huh.
There is such a concept, but you're not. If a man has a child with a non-Jewish woman,
yeah.
And then everyone decides to become a baal tshuva, the whole family becomes fine Orthodox Jews. The mother, whatever it is, but I'm saying in this case, so the mother converts and the child converts, and they all now live as one big happy frum family. Still. The father has no halachic relationship with the child. There's nothing wrong with treating the child, you know, as your child and supporting it and loving it and caring for it. But I'm saying from a technical halachic perspective, there is no relationship over here.
But when they don't do any of that, then there certainly is no relationship.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So you do, again. So you would not have to sechiva. You could volunteer if you wanted, but you would not be required.
Maybe this is another topic, but for some other time possibly. But what are some examples of people voluntarily sitting shiva for people they're not strictly aware?
For adopted parents, just a regular, for example, yeah. Okay. You could even sit shiva for. I mean, it's unheard of nowadays. Although I mentioned this at Yosef Shiva, and he claims he did hear of somebody who did this, but. As far as I'm concerned, it's basically unheard of nowadays. You're allowed to volunteer avelos, if even for a close friend, if you want to. Again, it's pretty much unheard of to volunteer technical avelos nowadays, except in the case of adoptive parents or in like we were discussing before.
How about your rebbe?
You could volunteer, yeah. you have to rip kriya if it's your Rebbe Muvak. When your Rebbe dies, so then you have to rip kriya.
Then there's a whole education thing here, because is the community going to take you seriously? Are they going to come and pay shiva visits?
If you sit shiva, that's
a whole different thing. I mean, but for your friend or for your Rebbe, are people going to take you seriously?
Nowadays, probably not. Like I said, because it's unheard of. I mean, yeah, hopefully they'll be sensitive. You know, if you say so and so is sitting shiva for their friend, so you might go say, you know, drop in and say hello.
Well,
but
the community who sat shiva for non-Jewish parents and
well, I should
at least
hope so.
An Arshul.
I mean,
right, but that wasn't a real shiva. That was
they took visitors for
a couple hours in their house. It wasn't a real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
V'chein ger shehoroso shelo bikdusha afal pi shenolad bikdusha. So if a woman is pregnant, a non-Jewish woman is pregnant, and she converts, so the conversion works, assuming the Beis Din is aware that she's pregnant, the conversion works for both herself and the child that she's carrying. But in that case, there's no technical relationship between the child and the father, even if the child was converted before it's born, nevertheless, since at the moment of conception it was with a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, then there is no relationship between the parent and the child. Eino chayev al kilas aviv, you don't receive the penalty if you curse your father. Uchshem she'eino chayev al kilas aviv kach eino chayev al kilas imo af abishu yehudis keshila datu. So there's an interesting din over here that since you're exempt from your father, even though there is a relationship between the mother and the child, because the mother gave birth to a Jewish child, so you still wouldn't be liable for cursing one's mother in this case because there's no father to speak of. So a person has to have both a halachic father and a halachic mother in order to be chayev on either one. But, you're probably thinking of the question that the Sefer Chinuch is about to ask. Ve'ein lahakshos al drosha zo mishtuki. What about the shtuki? I just told you that for a shtuki, so he's chayev on the mother, but not on the father. So how could that be? Shechayev al imo levada, lefi she'ena av yadua v'nikar. There's a difference. Technically, the child does have a halachic father. You just don't know who it is. Even if she tells you it is, you don't fully believe her. You just believe her to the extent that the child is considered kosher. So it has to be, in order to be exempt for either parent, it has to be that be'etzim you don't have a father. If be'etzim you don't have a father, then you're not chayev on the mother either. Okay. V'hager asur l'kalal aviv hagoy midrabanan. So converts are not allowed to curse their non-Jewish parents on a derabbanan level. Because, of course, on a deraisa level, like we said before, and for most things on a derabbanan level, a Jew and a non-Jew cannot be related at all. So therefore, once a non-Jew converts, that severs any relationship with the parents. So if a non-Jewish, regular non-Jewish happy family dies, not the whole family, I'm saying if you have a regular non-Jewish family, then the father dies, so the children are going to inherit. They are fully related halachically, insofar as halacha relates to non-Jews, which have a mitzvah, noach, whatever, so that the children are going to inherit the father. But if one of the children is Jewish, decided to convert, so then the child gets nothing, because this child is no longer halachically related to the biological father. So let's say, but midrabanan, so a non-Jew is not allowed to curse the father. So non-Jews shouldn't say, what? When I was not Jewish, so I had to treat my parents with respect. Now that I'm Jewish, I'm allowed to go around cursing my parents. So even in people's minds, they still think of them as parents, even though halachically they're not. So you shouldn't, it's a similar halacha that be on a daraisa level. So if a son converts, so he's allowed to marry his mother, his biological mother, because they have no relationship halachically whatsoever. But midrabanan, that's not allowed. Doesn't mean you should. Just means you're technically allowed. So on the derabanan level, that is not allowed. Again, obviously the mother has to convert also. the mother converts also, so that is not allowed, because they're not allowed to say, they shouldn't say, well, when we were not Jewish, we were not, I wasn't allowed to marry my mother, now I am. What is this? Being Jewish is less severe than being not Jewish? So to avoid this perception, so Chazal prohibited certain things that are allowed under the Raisa level due to the fact that Gershon is Gar Kikotin Shanola Dami, that when a person converts, so it's as if they're born anew, and they sever all relationships with non-Jewish relations. Aval ha'eved ein lo yichus, but it's non-Jewish slave, or who's has this quasi half conversion to become a slave in a Jewish household, so has no relationships whatsoever. Ve'arei aviv k'misha ino aviv l'chol dover. There's no prohibition whatsoever to curse the father. I mean, no penalty again. Shouldn't do it. Not good midos. But there's no penalty. There's no penalty or technical prohibition whatsoever. Daf la'achar shenishtacharer. So we the slave, an eved kanani or shivcha kananis, once they go this undergo this quasi conversion, so there's no going back to being completely not Jewish. They're always going to remain slightly Jewish. So when the slave is freed, so the slave becomes Jewish. A regular Jewish person is like a convert. It might need another tefillah. Might need the other mikveh again, but there's no going back, in other words. Once the slave is freed, the slave becomes a full convert, and doesn't maintain this half status forever necessarily. So even after the slave is freed, there's absolutely zero relationship, even midrabanan, between the slave, even though now it's a full convert, there's no relationship with the non-Jewish relatives. The over alzev ekilam b'shemin hashemos niskal. If you use the name of God to curse your parents, you receive the penalty of stoning. Vushi yesham edim asra. Of course, if you have witnesses and warning, kemosh yadua b'chol ha-mitzvah, the same thing. Any mitzvah, vim kilam becham kinuyim loka. And if you curse your parents with a lighter name of God, that's not a specific name of God, then you receive the penalty of lashes.
Wait, can we just go back in the middle here? So if you don't have, just to recap that, if you don't have two fully Jewish parents, this doesn't apply?
Correct.
Huh. I mean, that seems like such a basic point. You'd think it would be right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Correct.
Okay.
Even if you don't know who one of them is, right, that doesn't apply, that doesn't affect the chiyuv for the one that you do know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But again, if you do not have two Jewish parents, correct, then you're not chayav for either one, even if you're born Jewish. Fine. Mitzvah Reish Samach Aleph, another happy mitzvah. Mitzvah sheyisrafu mishu yischayev sreifa. The mitzvah to put people to death through burning, for those who are liable to the penalty of burning. Leos Bezdin Sorfin Baesh, that the Bezdin, that the Jewish court, should use the death penalty of burning. Kilomar Shinitstavu HaBezdin Lasos Mishpat Bisrefa Mimiktsas Avera. So certain sins are subject to the penalty of burning. The Achas Man He Habal Isha Valima. One of them is if you marry a woman and her mother. Shinemar V'isha Shekachas Isha Vesima Zimahi Baesh Yisrefu So Veshen. So it's like it's a very bad thing, and they should be burnt with the fire, he and they. When this prohibition was originally stated of marrying a woman and her mother in above in Parshas Achrimos, what's this talking about? Meaning, from the simple reading of the verse, you'd say you burn both of them, but that doesn't make sense, because what did the first one do wrong? You marry a woman, you're living happily ever after for a few years, and then all of a sudden you get your eye on her mother, and you you marry her as well, and, okay,
well, a little strange. Who would marry them?
Well, no, you give her a ring, it wouldn't be toe-face necessarily, but you have to do the thing, you have to act as if you marry her, yeah.
Which means a ring. In this case, just fooling around. Doesn't just mean I'm going to stop by your house.
No, you could say Harei HaMikudesh Li B'Viyazo. Yeah. Anyway,
you would need witnesses for.
You don't need witnesses to the actual act. It's sufficient to go in alone together. When you make kiddush ebia, when you do kiddushin, first stage of marriage, betrothal, with an act of relations, then You have to, for any betrothal, any kiddushin, you need to have witnesses. Just like at a wedding, you need to have a regular wedding. Nowadays, we do kiddush kesef most of the time. We use an item of value to affect the betrothal instead of this alternate method. Then you need witnesses. So if you want to use the method of relations, you also need witnesses, but the witnesses don't have to be in the room watching every second. It's efficient if they, they shouldn't, as a matter of fact, for other reasons. But they should. You go. You stand outside the door. You say to your new bride, who is, I'm sure, very happy that our witness is standing right there. Harei mikudeshes li b'via zo kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. You walk into the room together. The witnesses stand outside for an amount of time that would be sufficient to complete the act, and you're considered to be completely married, even if you didn't do anything. Because you're being alone together and declaring your intention to do it is sufficient to affect kiddush v'via. Vehi ha'achrona, right, the only one who's really did something wrong is the second one. It just means one of them. What?
And the guy.
Right. But the first wife did nothing wrong. Right, she did absolutely nothing wrong. Shekein ba ha'perush nasecha sanhedrin ve'amru sham shekein b'makom ploni korin la'achas hein. Greek, whatever it's called, kemoshe kasavti sham. Just, that's the received interpretation of what it means. It doesn't make sense otherwise. So Arayos is bad because it joins two souls that are meant to be joined, etc. Medina Mitzvah, Masham Zichron Livracha, Mitzvah Sanisrafin. How did the Bezdin perform the death penalty of burning? Shahi Meshakin also Bezevel ad Arkuvosav. They used to sink him in manure, so he couldn't move. He couldn't move too much. Venosnin sudar koshe besoch sudarach v'chorech al tzavaro.
In fact, so
it hasn't been done in 1,000 years, but
has it been done?
Well, people should refrain from doing the things that result in strefa. That would be much better off. Again, it's hard, much harder to administer the death penalty in Jewish law than it is in secular law, in some ways, but. You need to have the two witnesses actually see it. You have to have their testimony perfectly corroborated.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard to administer the death penalty, but it certainly could happen. They have those famous statements in Masechet Sanhedrin that said, Rabbi Kiva said, if I had been on the Sanhedrin, they wouldn't have administered the death penalty even once in 70 years. Whatever, it's just the standard of evidence that's required. It makes it difficult, but it can be done. There's every reason to think that it was. So, this is what you do. You take a hard... towel, kerchief, something, you take and you put it inside a soft one, you wrap it around the person's neck. So you have it around the person's neck. You have the one witness pulling on one side and one witness pulling on the other side, and you slowly, so that the person is gasping for air and opens and uncontrollably opens the mouth, at which point then you take molten lead or tin and you pour it down the person's mouth, and it burns their innards and they die more quickly than with conventional burning. It's found in the 7th parak of Masechet Sanhedrin. And the reason, of course, that you have a hard... If you just had a hard kerchief that you were strangling the person with, again, with chenek, there's a different mitzvah of chenek, of some people are receive the death penalty of strangulation, so there you just have the same idea, you just keep pulling until the person expires. But the reason you have a hard one and a soft one is that it has to have a cushion between that and the person's neck, otherwise the hard kerchief is just going to create gashes. And the reason you have to have you can't just have a soft one because... not going to be strong enough to affect the desired effect that the person keeps his or her mouth open. You have the famous statement, so this is the way, this was considered more humane than other ways of burning someone to death. The Mishnah brings a statement of one of the Tanoim who says that when he remembers that one time there was a Bas Kohen who fornicated, and the Bas Kohen receives the penalty of Sreifa, so what do they do? They wrapped her with ropes, essentially, and they set it ablaze. They literally, they did what we think of burning to death. So they responded to him because there was no, that at the time, the court that was administering the death penalties was insufficiently knowledgeable in how to perform them properly, because this way was considered the most humane way of doing it, because apparently the person dies much more instantly as opposed to if the flames are licking at their flesh, which is very drawn out and painful method of burning to death. Whereas this is relatively instantaneous, my understanding. That's the way it is. The Minchas Chinuch brings a very interesting comment on this, which is, what's Pshat exactly? Is it that the Gemara seems to indicate that it's not this exact method that's prescribed by the Torah? The way the Torah prescribes, when it comes to the death penalty of burning, that it just has to be anything hot, basically. So does it mean, but we're required, because of the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, to do it as humanely as possible within the purview of the type of death penalty that the Torah prescribes. So does that mean, Minchas Chinuch asks, if, let's say, no molten lead is available, so and you have no choice, you have to administer the death penalty of Sreifa, do you wrap the person with ropes and set it ablaze? Do you do something else? So Minchas Chinuch isn't exactly sure, because he says for that particular method, it sounds in the Gemara like the people who did this maaseh that was recorded in the Mishnah was done by Beis Din of Tzedukim. That this was a Tzeduki thing, that they took everything in the written Torah more literally. They didn't have the interpretive tradition. So they said, burning, okay, let's burn. Let's wrap her with the ropes and set it on fire. So it sounds like Yubadavka shouldn't do that, but the Minchas Chinuch isn't exactly sure. He thinks that since perhaps you're Yotze B'dieved with any type of hot thing, so maybe you should do that. But anyway, the Gemara does say that the reason this was the accepted practice in Jewish courts was not necessarily that this is the only acceptable way, but because this was considered the most humane way of administering the death penalty through burning.
Would electrocution be considered on, hot...
Well, the electric—it's not... Electrocution means that it sends an electric current through your body, and I guess heats the cells, but I guess... Current touches your body. Is there any heat source? No, the electrodes go into, just put the electrodes into your body. So you probably would think maybe not then. There needs to be a heat source that's independently hot before it touches your body. But again, it's a good question, because electricity has a din of fire. Well, but it doesn't really. Electricity, the electric current doesn't have the din of fire. It's only electric bulbs that may have a din of fire in certain incandescent bulbs. Again, it won't be too graphic, but if they were an electric, electric stove or something, so then you would be able to get hot before it touches you. But okay, we'll figure out what to do when we cross that bridge. Benohegis mitzvah zo bizcharim ki lehem hamishpat. It's the men who have to perform this mitzvah. Eretz Yisrael bilvad kihi mekom hamishpat. In Eretz Yisrael, again, the Minchas going to point out many times that it's not davka in Eretz Yisrael. It just has to be the people who administer the penalty receive the smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Kihi mekom hamishpat. So if you don't do the sreifa when it's recalled for, so that's not proper justice, and then people are going to get the idea that they can get off scot-free for doing sins. So you have to make sure, it's very important that the Beis Din be concerned that the punishments and justice is administered properly. So the Ramban doesn't count the administering of the death penalty, each of the four death penalties, as a separate mitzvah. He just considers a part of the general prohibition to do justice and to for the courts to function in the way they're supposed to function, and the penalty for each mitzvah to be administered properly, but he would subtract here four from the Cheshben HaMitzvos, because he doesn't count Skila, Sreifa, Harig, and Chenek as four in the Cheshben HaMitzvos, in the counting of the 613 mitzvos.